welcome back to another edition of At the Devil's Ball, a very special episode this week. We have a very special guest. We have Nick McAnulty?
It's McAnulty.
McAnulty. The director of this week's film, Capture, Kill, Release, alongside, of course, before I give you all the credit, you are co-directing with Brian Allen Stewart.
That's correct.
Yeah. And we'll jump right into that after Sam does the vitals, which will probably be short and sweet because there's only like five actual speaking roles in the movie. So
yeah. So Capture, Kill, Release was released in 2016. Obviously, McAnulty directed it, and my tablet has frozen, which is awesome. Having a great day.
Oh, okay.
Let's just skip it. Let's go get right into the movie, guys. Because
no, I'll
tablet quickly restarted.
All right. Well, we've got the cast of Jennifer Frazier. We've got Farhang. I'm going to mangle that name, and I apologize. Gajar.
Yeah, Farhang Gajar.
Farhang Gajar. We've got John Gates, Rich Piotkowski, and Christina Schimmel. I think actually only two other people even appear in the movie. They just don't speak. And it was co-written by, it was you and Jennifer Frazier, correct?
So the writing credit for the movie is, I wrote a script for it, which, you know, I think with a lot of found footage movies, you see a lot of different situations happen. You know, they can run the gamut in quality and how much sort of planning that goes into them. Sometimes they're completely improv. Sometimes it could be something that's completely scripted. Right. This was something where people think that it's all kind of improv. This is something that there was a very clear script with everything that's happening, but just due to the nature of how it's shot, how much freedom you have with that, there was so much improv that was allowed. And so much of that was really adapting to both Jen and Farhang's voices. So they have co-writing credits in the script just because they brought so much of their own to what was there. So we would build on what was on the page. We'd make sure that we were getting what's on the page because there's story and character that has to go there. But then they brought so much to it that so much of that actual script is them, and we would find what they're doing and build on that and give them that freedom. So it's absolutely have to give them credit for the writing part of that.
Absolutely. And they do both are extraordinary. Yeah.
That actually rolled into basically what my first question was because I mean the characters come off as so actualized. Like it's not, you know, you're watching characters on the screen. They feel like they're living in those characters. So I guess that makes sense that you guys worked a lot with them to get their voice across.
Yeah. It's the casting for this was interesting in a way that I really wanted chemistry to be a big part of it. I've worked with Farhang in the past. He's a phenomenal actor, just great guy to work with. Like he brings just a great energy on set. So I wanted somebody that he had chemistry with. So I actually, he's an actor, he works in that world. Talked to him about the script. He read it, he loved it. And then talked to him about bringing a potential actor on. So he brought in a few different actresses that I just kind of met and saw what their chemistry was. And it was less of a standard audition and more just seeing what their chemistry was. And then we kind of let them film some stuff together. And then, lots of great actresses that he brought in. But then when I met Jen, I was like, I wanted to give her the part on the spot, and just the professionalism kind of had to like sit back and marinate on that. Yeah. But yeah, she's phenomenal and just brought this danger and energy that is as much as you have in your mind. It's like she went beyond what that is. Like this is as much credit as I want to take for what this movie is. At the end of the day, it's the performances that really, you know, and this is going to happen with any movie, but for something that's so, it's the two of them.
Right. So intimate.
Are the only ones who are there. So they're going to make or break the movie, and their chemistry and performances together absolutely do that.
Totally. And actually that surprises me. I would have thought watching the movie, I would have thought you had Jen first and then Farhan, because she owns this movie. So not to discredit or to diminish Farhan.
No, she's
well, it's her movie, basically. I mean, it's
well, I actually that's something I wanted to get to when we talk more about the movie itself, is that while the movie is so, she's the protagonist in a way, the movie is about Farhan.
Yeah.
But from my perspective, I always kind of thought she would have been first because she's such an anchor in this movie. But
she's such an anchor. It's it was a struggle to cast this movie.
I bet.
Like it's just such seemingly simple, but there's a lot of layers, like a very complicated role, and it has to be somebody that's like their actions are completely despicable, but then you have to be engaged by watching them. If it's somebody you don't want to watch, you're gonna tune out very quickly. So you have to be turned off what they're doing, but also engaged with them. Really complicated. And once we found Jen, it was like a switch went off. It's immediately knew that this was like she was going to elevate what this movie was, and the performance she gives is just like it's mind-boggling.
Yeah. So how much of the plot itself was actually, like, you know, inspired by the casting choices of the two? Because I mean, they really pull off in a very, it's subtle at the beginning, but by the end, obviously, it's been made more explicit that this is like, you know, a serial killer's version of let's have a three-way to save our marriage. That's in a lot of ways.
You've nailed what we kind of tapped into. The before like any cast came in, there was the script story-wise. I mean, dialogue's changing, and we came up with some ideas that kind of changed, but the script is what you see. That was all cemented, and the thought of what it is, and I guess to give you a little bit of background, I just sort of like coming up with this idea. It's probably two instances where one was like, I think just reading up on some crime that happened. Mm-hmm. And it was a conversation with friends where it was like, I don't get it, but to a degree you get when like some psychotic person goes out and does something. Something is wired wrong, and they go and they do that, and it's sick and it's tragic, but it's like, okay, yeah, there are sick people in there. Mm-hmm. What we couldn't grasp our heads around, and I still can't, but it was like that thing that I wanted to kind of like dive into what this would be about, and that light bulb of like, I think there's a movie idea here, is how do two people become involved in something? Mm-hmm. It's how do you, and then when they do, how does that conversation first come up? And really it was like, it became about, even though it's not explicitly said it's sexual in the movie, really brought up that idea that it's like, how does somebody have the trust to put in to say to their partner that they have like a weird sexual fetish, you know, exactly. You know, I want to be peed on, you know, it's like something like that. Right. It takes a lot of trust or something to bring that up. So it's like, it would probably be in sort of that same way. So that's what we really played with, what that would be. And even though we don't, again, ever explicitly, well, there's some parts where it gets a little more, where it's not necessarily like this is a sexual thrill, that idea of like how that stick and carrot of the relationship and going through with this was always kind of dealt with. And at that point, when it was, you know, the idea for a script, at one point it was something where I thought it would just, that would be the whole movie. There's a whole movie there before we even get to the movie.
Right.
On like, how do you have those conversations? What would it be? And it's something that I worked on, like a completely different movie, a completely different script, where it was just about building up to like how you kind of have those, that confession. And then once really wanted to get into the meat of it, because the other stuff I was finding is just like those weird conversations. Like if you're going to get rid of a body or something, like how would you do it? Right. Which we don't want to admit, but everybody's had those like,
oh, sure.
That drunken conversation where like, I don't know, I'd kind of do this.
Every time you watch a serial killer movie, you're like, you know, kind of critiquing their style.
Yeah, you're like, I wouldn't do it. And so that time I was talking with a friend, like one of these conversations, and then he's like, fuck this, I'm going to like look it up. So looks it up and he goes down this, like, he finds some abandoned GeoCities doc written in like broken, like filled with grammatical and spelling errors that of what they would do.
Yeah.
And it kind of ruined the night. Cause like, Jesus Christ, somebody's thought too much about this. So once that's where kind of the movie, the direction of what it became, this logistic thought came of like, this movie's going to, instead of like, cause you could have that whole movie of like what those conversations are.
Yeah.
Instead, the audience is going to play catch up, that this is something that this is already happening. And it's so casual and nonchalant where you're in like a hardware. If you didn't read the synopsis of the movie, you're in the hardware store. Like, what are they talking about? Like,
even then the reveal is not really in the hardware store. It's after he's at Ferrara's at the table doing his research. And she's like, you know, and that's when they start talking about like, we're just going to kill somebody. Use your bare hands.
Right. Yeah.
We start to realize what we're really talking about. Which is interesting. And in my analysis, one of the questions I keep coming up with, and I wrote it down, was how seriously Farrar takes this at the beginning. Because like I said, I think that in particular in the first act, this movie is very much as Sam put it, you know, we have to have a threesome to save our marriage.
Yeah.
Like, you know, where it's clearly that he's at least looking at it from a perspective of, this is just a weird fantasy she has.
Yes.
And then I think, then he realizes she's serious and he gets cold feet.
Yes.
That's, and that brings up, I think, into the second part of the movie, where I think the movie switches gears into becoming an abuse film.
Yeah.
Where she is abusive towards Farrar. And then it turns into the third, which is this, it starts to examine the idea of like how complicit is Farrar in all of this at the end of the day, because he wasn't strong enough to stand up to her. How much is Farrar how much guilt does Farrar actually have? And of course you end the movie with spoiler alert, obviously, if you haven't seen Catch or Kill Release, go watch it. It's on Tubi. Check it out. And then come back and listen to the rest of this. But obviously the movie ends with like basically him going to prison. Like the cops are about to burst into the house. And you feel for him, because as we talked about, like this movie doesn't work if you don't feel for these people. And in particularly Farrar, you feel. I mean, I remember I was watching this time around. This was the second or third time I'd seen the film. I saw it actually, I think, in 2016 when it came out. I remember I was actually at work working the overnight, and I started watching it. And then they got to the table scene at the beginning of the movie, and I said, I can't watch this at work.
Yeah, that NSFW.
Yeah, and not even that. I've watched some really crazy shit during overnight shifts at hotels I've worked for in the past. But I only watch like trash.
Yeah,
because I want to pay attention to good movies. And so I was watching Kill God, and I was like, I thought originally going into, I'm like, okay, clever idea. It's a found footage movie. How great can this be? And then by the third scene, I was like, I'm already in, and I need to wait and watch this later. And I went home and watched it. But this time around, I found how much I really identify with Farrar as someone who, my first sexual relationship was in fact a kinky one, but I was 20 and I had no idea how like sub-dom relationships really worked. And I ended up dating a girl who was unstable, who was into the same thing, but she basically used my inexperience to basically abuse me. And I'm still dealing with that trauma today. Mm-hmm. I didn't even realize until, you know, well into adulthood, how much that was actually a problem. But right. I kept thinking, I'm like, I feel so badly for Farrar, but you know, where I think that I felt that connection to him, where it was like, well, you know, I really want to make her happy. And right. I think that there's a lot of insecurity to Farrar, you know, where he's like, I can't, you know, what if she leaves me? So I have to put up with this.
Because he'd do anything for her, but she, you know, she knows that and she's using it 100%. Basically.
Well, that's a question for you, Nick. Does she love him? Good stuff one. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know what, I've never actually been asked that directly. Like, I, yes, but in a, like, such a, the character's such a narcissist and mm-hmm. And sociopath, where it's really about her and her her desire, and not really getting the connection of why he can't go through to, like, fulfill right. something that, especially when once he's promised that he's done it,
right?
You know, to the degree that as much as somebody else could feel that way, yes, I do think that she does, but not in a way that
not in an empathic way, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's traditionally how sociopaths usually work. It's usually a misnomer that they don't feel feelings. They do. They just recontextualize them based around themselves. But I kept going around. I kept coming back around this particular watch of wondering if she's actually really a sociopath and more acting out sort of a sick response to some abuse in her own past. That and as I told you before we started recording, I was going to over-intellectualize this, so I apologize. it's kind of what I do. But I found myself wondering if there was abuse in her past, because there are two instances in which there are old videotapes that show her as a child. She's seemingly being filmed by her father, at least by a man. And one of the questions that I had after finishing the movie this time around was, who is her intended audience? Is it for herself, or is it for someone else, like an imaginary someone? And I started wondering if it was maybe her father, that maybe, like, her father had filmed her as a young woman. She associated that with her self-worth. And then there was some abuse there, because she's abusive towards Farrar, and usually abused people were abused. But also, like, there are instances when he does stand up to her, she stops cold, where she's taken aback, like almost like there's a fear there. So, I mean, like, I've over-intellectualized this to wonder if this is actually a psychosis that's been brought around by a traumatic past, or if she's just a stone cold sociopath.
So this is some great analysis. I'm going to probably burst your bubble and hopefully not disappoint, but like, this is the intention where this went and what's kind of what I was trying to say. But then again, you give a movie out to the world, and it's like what they see. I don't want to say what is necessarily right or wrong.
Oh, sure.
So with the videotapes, those were very purposely put in there, not as some key of, like, here's this terrible traumatic stuff that happened to this character, but really meant to be quite the opposite, where just here she is, and she's just a kid, and just
innocent child,
normal upbringing, and that sometimes people are just wired wrong, and we want those answers, that it's like, of course this happened because somebody was abused, which, you know, that absolutely does, that cycle does continue, and it can, you know, at least that happen again and again, but that at least that gives us answers, and we can justify the scary in the world. And instead, this was just, her upbringing was fine. We see her with her mom, and
yeah, her mom was pretty nice. Right. Yeah.
And doing that, you know, some things that we did there, which are just, like the videotapes, those are actual tapes of her as.
Oh, really? Wow.
Oh, cool.
She, if we had to shoot something, we would, but I'd talk to her, and if she had this, if it's something she'd comfortable with, and I got, you know, good amount of tape from her childhood that transcribed some stuff and found it in there.
Nice.
That's so awesome. It's a combination of that, and then her mother in the movie is
her real mother.
That's her real mother.
Yeah,
and she had no idea what this movie is about.
Well, how do you explain the movie to Bob in the first place? I could see that. Yeah.
So was that scene improvised? Because she starts talking about how you can kill a cat. like, right. You know, at the right. And by the way, sorry, Sam. Sam's cat passed away earlier this week. So
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Yeah. But so, yeah, we forgot about the cat. I forgot about the cat death, and I didn't get a chance to warn him.
I tried to watch this movie like the day after, and I'm like, oh, well, I'm done for the night.
Yeah, I'll have to come back to this. But but yeah, so how did her mother respond to that? Because like, Jen, the character of Jen starts talking about how, like, you know, terminal velocity of cats.
So she did know. She did know it was fiction. We didn't. Right. We didn't go in and be like, hey, we're just friends of Jen and we're shooting you for no reason. Like we're doing this kind of thing and just, we want your genuine relationship, but there might be some stuff to just roll with it.
Right.
Which you don't know how that's going to go. That's a lot of pressure to put on people, you know, I think like she was nervous. I think Jen was a little nervous, like if her mom would actually go for it. And at the end of the day, if it doesn't work, we would, you know, we get a professional actor to do the part. Right, sure. But, you know, again, I sought out to really make this about chemistry and relationships. And that's what was really the foundation for a lot of this. So I thought, like, nobody's going to have a better mother-daughter relationship than with her actual mother. So we went in that way. And her mom was just great. She just rolled with, you know, I think she kind of rolls her eyes and kind of like, yep, that's our Jen.
Right. That's Jen, yeah.
I also liked that you know, her mother didn't seem to react to that stuff very much. So it was, you know, there's always like two tropes you go with you know, like serial killer, you know, parents. It's like, oh, they were hiding it all along. They knew this person was a bad seed. And then, you know, more often in real life, it's people that just like, they raised these people or they've lived with these people all these years and they just never saw it, you know, they just, because it's right there in front of your face, and she doesn't seem to know that there's anything wrong with her. And I thought that was kind of cool to see that. Yeah, she kind of rolls with it. She's like, okay, that's a little weird, but you know, that's just her being her. And
yeah, and the movie's kind of like, this is her building up to like have the
right
courage, if those are the words, for her first time,
to her coming out party, or
yeah, it's her, it's her coming out party to be a serial killer. And you know, her partner thinking that it's really just fantasy, and then when it's not fantasy and it finally happens, and at least it's a okay, it happened, put it behind us. And then her being like, no, I kind of like this, and maybe we keep doing this some more.
Yeah. So before moving on to some other key scenes, the other question I wanted that I kind of had about the relationship itself is, but I found it fascinating that Jen seems to need Farrar to be involved. And it seems to change as to what her, motivation for that might be. In particular, I noticed in the bathroom scene after they've killed, the homeless gentleman,
Gary.
Yeah. After they kill Gary. She kind of is like, she does like she cuts like one incision into the guy's arm and then says, okay, Farrar, your turn.
Yeah.
And he does all of the work at that point. And I was like, is she just lazy? She doesn't want to, she wants to do the fun part.
My reaction to that scene was because, you know, earlier you had mentioned that like, you need to be able to keep the audience along with this character, not fall over the edge of them, just making them despicable. And for me, that was the closest part it came, because I'm like, you need to help do the work.
Yeah.
We're doing chores here. That was the part where, like, dude, come on, help out. You know?
Yeah.
It's, you know, coming back to this, this idea that this is, you know, the words of like, this is her coming out party of doing this. Mm-hmm. It's to commit an act like this is, it's crazy. It's right. Insane. You have to be a sick person to do that.
Right.
And if you're doing something with another you can do a lot of crazy shit if you've got a like a quote unquote partner in crime to do this. You know, it's you know, think of riots, that the more people are involved with something, the kind of easier it is for normal people to go on with stuff. So it's not just her going out and killing homeless people, killing cats, doing this. Right. If somebody else is there, it's a little less crazy. And this is her partner, her life partner. And he's, you know, for better or for worse, sickness and health, murder and more murder. It just feels a little bit saner. And then something in another layer of like that twisted sick way of like you can relive stuff more if you've done it with someone. You know, you go on a vacation with your partner, and then that vacation lives on forever. It's always going to live on if you go on a great trip, but you know, to just have those, you sit back and like, yeah, remember when we did this? Do you remember Italy? Mm-hmm. Do you remember the dish we had?
And it's been remember when we tried to feed somebody a pie that just came out of the oven and that it wasn't cold at all?
Yeah.
That was a weird day.
Yeah. Like when there's a scene where Jen's kind of reliving it, but she's reliving it alone. And there's like a little, you can sense like she feels a little like bored and off, like this isn't quite doing it enough. Where if you can do that with somebody else, it at least, it prolongs stuff. It extends the life and memory.
Yeah. Well, actually, I love that scene. It's actually probably the most horrific Jen is in the movie, I think.
Oh, definitely.
How amusing she is to where she's like mocking Gary and what he said at dinner, which was actually very nice. Like he was such a sweet guy and being very nice to her. And she's like, I'm going to kill you.
And I think she genuinely did like him. I mean, she lied.
That's something I really wanted to get. That's like, she actually liked Gary.
Yeah.
It wasn't a personal thing. It wasn't against Gary.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and she seemed to kill Gary to punish Farrar. And, because she wanted Farrar to take this seriously, like the cat, you know, where she literally goes out of her way to go kill a cat just to punish Farrar. It's another really, really mean bitchy scene too, where she kills her. And then she's like, she woke him up first of all, in the middle of the dead sleep, in the middle of the night to go get this cat, drowns him. And then says, I'm tired. I'm going to bed. Can you clean this up? It's so dark, and it's such a abusive moment. And he just sort of is helpless to do anything about it. But even that somehow is less cold than her mocking Gary afterwards. Like there's something truly unsettling about her, like, you know, sitting at that table by herself and mocking the man she just killed. But you're right. I didn't think of it like that, where it was without Farrar to participate, it's empty.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she's like, that's her best impression of it, but it's not even so much to be a haha, Gary, you suck, but like just sitting there,
reliving.
She's sitting in a seat, she can, the best she can to relive that moment, because, you know, ideally this is something that you'd do once to get it out of your system.
Right. Or even if you are going to be somebody who goes out and do it, I mean, the reliving of the act is a big part of the process, it seems, with, you know, serial killers and such. It's the reason they take trophies and do weird shit like that.
Mm-hmm. Is that what the film is, do you think? Is it trophies or is it a vacation video?
Me personally, I think it's just a vacation video, but, you know, let's
hit by that.
It's kind of a combination of both, and in a weird way, art. Like she, you know, there's the scene where we kind of introduced the old camera that would have been the old camera living at her mom's place. It kind of alludes that she wanted to be a different life, like a movie maker.
Yeah.
And this thing that she really has so much passion about wanting to do and document, it's for her, that vacation video, to kind of like relive, but it's really meant as I'm making a movie.
Yeah. I'm expressing myself. Yeah. Yeah. More, it's more than just that's when it sort of also transcends. It's more than just a fetish.
That's why it's little, and this kind of hits the Venn diagram of all of, but little moments like when Gary's there, it's not just like, oh, I have to get Gary's reaction. It's like, yeah, you handling this.
You come in and help it.
What I want to see. I want to see what you see.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's also when we really know for sure that I think that it's not a fantasy, is when she starts talking, but they're in the car talking about who they shouldn't kill, which is a very comic scene. One of the very few, I think, in this movie. Then after a certain point, there's no more comedy. It just becomes like kind of this grim serial killer movie. But But yeah, it's but she when she talks about how much she wants to see the reaction, she wants to look in the eyes of the person that she kills and wants them to know that she's killing them. That is such a chilling concept that it's not just about the act itself. It's about the reaction. It's about the psychology. I can't just kill anybody. I need to, it needs to be somebody who knows that what they're, I'm doing to them. It's really distasteful. And that's a question I actually had for you. I don't know if you're aware of this. I've seen it pop up, this film pop up a couple of times in some articles and some memes in as a disturbing film or a stressful film or an extreme film, along with companies such as, like, you know, Martyrs and stuff like that. Is that how do you feel about that? How do you classify this film, if you do at all?
It's so I want to be careful to not be like, God, this, you know, this movie's trash or whatever, because like, I do think some, you know, movies can be shocking with merit. And other movies can be shocking for the sake of being shocking,
for real.
Yeah. Which, you know, and sometimes you have the intention for it to be one and it goes the other way and then vice versa. So, you know, I think like something like Martyrs is often, you know, it's a brutal film.
Yeah.
You know, when people like talk about like the most shocking movies they've seen, it usually like reaches those lists. I was afraid to watch it the first time I did, just because it was like built up as like such a intense movie, which it is, but
yeah,
it's also a, I think there is a lot of merit in that movie of like the, yeah, some of the stuff it has to say. It's actually quite a beautifully made movie.
Actually fantastic. It's just really hard to watch. Yeah.
And in terms of like storytelling, it takes a good number of twists where I'm like, am I watching a supernatural movie? Am I like, I didn't know. So, you know, I think sometimes it's often dismissed in some categories of like shock movies where yes, it's shocking, but it's, I think it has more merit. Some other movies where like that we've been compared to, and I feel like I don't think they've seen this movie. If they say this, like some movies like the August Underground movie, like those, again, not to talk trash about somebody's work, but it really feels like the point of that movie is to really shock and upset an audience. Which I do want the subject matter of this to be upsetting, but not in a way that is glamorizing it. You know, you've talked about points of like, there's a lot of themes of, you know, emotionally abusive relationships that I think great horror, most horror movies, but great horror movies are really saying something about something else. And in this kind of fantastical setting, there's a whole lot that's going on in this movie. At least my intention was, that's getting into that, where I'm fine with people to be like, this is shocking. You know, there's some stuff in there that's like, that dismemberment, it's not meant to be a comfortable thing. But I don't want it to be titillating, and I don't want it to just be like, oh, you have to see this because it's the most shocking movie that's there. I think there's it's saying more. I think the performances themselves deserve you know, Farhang and Jen's performances and everybody's performance deserve more to just be than like the, oh, we try to like shock you over the head. Shock can be easy. Stuff that's got a bit more emotion and this and that is a little more complicated, which I think,
and it sticks with you better. I mean,
which some people have gotten that out of this movie and some people haven't. Art's subjective that way. So I'm very much okay if people kind of like loop us in with this is a very shocking movie, you know, if they make those lists or whatnot, but I hope that when people see it, they get more out of it than that.
And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to ask the question, is because I thought about it, and I was, when I saw it pop up a couple of times, you know, in people sharing memes, I would, you know, they had put it into like, it was the one I remember very clearly was like, I those tiered ones, like, you know,
the iceberg list crap.
Yeah, something like that. Capture Kill Release was on a couple of those, and I remember seeing one person putting it into like haven't seen, and I said, well, do yourself a favor and watch Capture Kill Release. It's really great. Then I found out who you were. Like, we were actually following each other on Twitter, and I went, holy crap, that's the guy who made Capture Kill Release, and I've been talking about this film. But I saw it there and I said, well, that's an odd comparison to make, because while this movie is disturbing, I didn't necessarily find it stressful. In fact, the most stressful stuff about it, I think, is like Gary, like the dinner scene. The actual dismemberment stuff is more is gory,
right?
But he's already dead. Like,
yeah.
No. And even the murders themselves are actually pretty tame in comparison to what we'll say. I mean, obviously Martyrs is extreme.
Right.
The murders themselves are, I mean, Gary, you kind of get yourself built up with that scene, which I want to talk about a little bit more in depth, but the whole buildup of that is what's the most stressful, quote, stressful part of the movie, which is, you know, you know what's happening. We know what's about to happen. This nice, amiable homeless man who never did a wrong to anybody, at least as far as we know. And then ultimately she just kind of strangles him with a rope. Like, we don't, it's not like she like carves out his eyes, you know, she doesn't cut off his ears. She doesn't, you know, nothing terrible, except for the emotion of the scene is terrible. And so I found it odd that movie, because it never occurred to me to put it into that category. As disturbing a movie as it is, I thought it was way more, much more of a character study to me than a,
The stress. The stressful parts for me were the parts where they were arguing with each other. Like, it's like, oh,
yeah,
and mommy, daddy, don't fight, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what it is. Like, if you, it's easy to come up with something that's shocking. Like you said, if that was the intention, I could be like, yeah. And then they torture him for 5 days and they rip his eyeballs out. The movie's got this kind, you're hopefully in Farhang's shoes for most of it, where there's this false safety net, like right from the get-go, it tells you what they're going to be doing. But up until that dinner scene, most of the scenes are relatively, for such bleak subject matter, they're kind of fun. Like the two leads are, and this is where that chemistry comes in. They're genuinely funny a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a little bit of like a hangout movie vibe to it. There's some really dark humor as they're kind of picking out who it'll be. So you're in his shoes where it's like, yeah, we're doing this, but like,
we're not really doing this.
We're not really doing it. It's kind of like,
when he comes home and he has to show her the tool he bought, you know, he's like, it was on sale. And
yeah, it's like, it's really like a hot, weird role play thing that we're doing. And, but you know, it's happening, but then it's not. And then once we're there, we kind of reach that point of no return. We're there with him. And it's very intentional. Like that dinner scene is probably close to like 10 minutes of just like, it's not like, oh, we're going to go and spend that time and spend 10 minutes torturing this guy. It's like, no, we're going to spend that time. We're going to sit at dinner, and Gary's going to be kind of like, kind of dumb and charming and silly and fun. And a conversation is going to happen where
Farhang can
explicitly say what's happening, but trying to end this, Jen is going to revel in every moment of having it. Gary's going to be oblivious, and like that's very intentional, that kind of three-way pull of what's happening there. And then once, you know, the momentum continues from there, it goes. But you're right that the actual like murder itself is very in comparison relatively brief.
I mean, that dinner scene is like, you know, the Bob under the table scene, except, you know, this time it's, we know it's there. One of the characters does it. One of the characters does it. One of the characters is like, maybe I could make the bomb not be there, you know?
Well, you say like, yeah, it's not about torturing Gary. It's about torturing Farrar, which by extension is us. You know, we want Farrar to do the right thing. But we kind of know he won't, because Jen's got him wrapped around her finger.
Right.
And she's got us wrapped around her finger. I mean, I fell in love with Jen the first time I watched this movie. I was like, oh my God, this woman is amazing. And then I'm like, she's going to murder people. And I still like, I'm like me, like, you know, like I want her to like, I, you know, it's such a fascinating role, and it's such a great performance that we really, we really want to be on her side.
Like, yeah, right. I've as kind of going into it as an unofficial kind of goal. I was like, I want the movie's done. I want the like most of the men that watch this to have fallen in love, and the women that have been like, she's fucking nuts, right, yeah, and hate her. And you'll see reviews like that where it's like, this is one star because yeah, she's a fucking psycho. And I'm like,
yeah, yeah, right. That's kind of the point of the film. I did like that, you know, the whole thing is kind of a role reversal, because, I mean, you know, most of the times in these sorts of movies, you know, it's the male character that's the abuser, the female character that's the abused. And even up to the end, you know, as I was watching the end of this movie, I'm like, you know, he is just so absolutely fucked. Yeah. Even if he didn't have any responsibility for what happened, and I think he obviously does.
Yeah.
No one in society is ever going to think, well, no, you know, who's going to believe him? He says, well, no, it was her. She wanted to do it, not me.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to be in the press. He's going to be like, you know, just made into this boogeyman that he never really was. And he's just screwed, you know, entirely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And coming back to the premise where it's like, before there was a script, before there was even like a fully idea, that those conversations, like, how do two people get involved with, right, this? You know, a lot of times it's romantic, but we've seen those movies so many, yeah, times. We've seen we've seen Badlands, we've seen Mickey and Mallory and Natural Born Killers. So right, it's like right away it was like, we gotta flip this, and it's not just flip it and the movie's done. Like, that changes, right, the dynamic in a huge way of what that is and how those you know, there's going to be a lot less physical intimidation that might be a factor in that, and it's a lot more psychological. And that's what that was there from the beginning of how what this is going to be, and it dictated what, right, really every which way this script went.
Yeah, I mean, she's super abusive to him in a lot of very subtle ways, until, you know, up until the point of like literally like calling him a coward, right, you know, just really like ripping into him. And of course, Farrar, that with that wonderful like hangdog expression that he gives,
yeah,
you know, every single time it's like kicking a puppy, right, you know, he's clearly so hurt by her that even when he's angry, he's not that angry. Like, right, he's like destroying the camera, but it's really more about, and it's not about her wanting to keep killing people. It's about her lying to him.
Mm-hmm.
It's about her not listening to him. You know, all of that anger it has, which is why, and this is a question I have for you, Sam, because obviously, Nick, you wrote it. Mm-hmm. So at the end of this film, did you think she was going to win or not, Sam?
Sorry, just audio cut out for a second.
Oh, sorry. When, how?
My question was, what did you think Jem was going to get away with?
Absolutely not.
No,
absolutely no. I never really thought they were going to get away with it.
I always thought when I first watched the movie, I thought Jem would kill Farrar at the end of the, right, movie and be.
Now,
like,
I did think that she was going to kill Farrar, or Farrar was going to kill her. One or the other. That was definitely an option, but I never thought like anybody was going to win per se. You know, it's a, right.
Well, yeah, by win I mean like I thought Jem. I thought
get away with it, or
get away with, you know, it. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Now, like I said, I think in the press she's gonna get away with it a lot more than Farrar will. You know, because, yeah, just the way that people are gonna see him, you know, as a, frankly, as a man and as a Middle Eastern man, and you know, her being, you know, the looking like the kind of girl you that gets a lot of coverage on CNN when they disappear.
Yeah.
I think the society's going to jump to a lot of conclusions, and he's, like I said, I feel like he's the most fucked any of them at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I found myself thinking that. And then this time watching it, I realized how much I was like, it needed to be that, because ultimately Farrar is the man, is the one who let it happen.
Right.
And he didn't have to. And that asks the question of whether or not he's a victim of an abusive relationship, or if there's something darker within Farrar. Is he a coward, or is he actually kind of evil in his own way? Because like I said, he doesn't really object to the actual killing as much as he objects to her violating their relationship. Like, you know, when she kills Gary, he's not upset that she killed Gary. She's upset that she lied to him about the poison. You know, he's yelling, "You said you didn't poison him." She's like, "Oh, technically I didn't. I gave him sleeping pills." So, I mean, what, Nick, what do you think of that? Do you, how do you view Farrar at the end of the day? Is he a victim? Is he complicit?
He's both. Mm-hmm. There's definitely it's like not really a black and white person on a lot of things. I think
sure.
things are very complicated, and you can be a victim, and you can be wrong. Like the right. character is obviously a victim of emotional abuse through this whole movie.
Yes.
But at the same time, there's a bit of commentary in being complicit in inaction, which right. there's so much inaction in the world, or just like, what am I going to do about it? Or like, I didn't technically do it, which that is wrong. He could yeah. still have put an end to things all the way.
Yeah.
At every step of the way he could do that. And you, to get a little bit more explicit, there's a couple parts where I literally wanted to make sure that there's blood on the mm. character's hands. Mm. Jen, her character, she literally makes him do it. And that's part of that. Like, yeah, I did my part. You've got to cut him up. You've got to do this.
Yeah. I did see that in that scene that, like, I thought it was really cool that he made him literally get his hands.
It's like it's like he's been kind of just going with it and, putting in yeah. his commentary, but lets it happen. It's something where she really makes sure it's like, nope, you're not going to watch this. Like, you're going to do your part. So let's do it. But then you could still argue that it's like, yeah, she's pushed him into doing this. Right. Then at the very end of the movie, once he's like,
right,
the hit to the head that he gives her, that's accidental. So like everything mm-hmm. to this point is either he's been coerced, forced, it's an accident. And then he's got the other victim who's got a thing, a hit in his head, and he's yeah. kind of like moaning, and he's on the call, like trying to get an ambulance right. there. And then just like, as everything boils up, he actually finishes the job on him. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
it reaches that point where I did a little bit more explicitly, even though we're on the journey with him, there's justification for it. It's wanted to have that literal blood on his hands. That it's
right.
like, at the end of the day, you can't argue that he did this, that he finished the job at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that mm-hmm. does point to a little bit more, to a little bit of darkness that was probably present in Farrar to begin mm-hmm. with, in the sense of, even when he realizes this is not a joke, he still participates.
Right.
And yeah. There has to be something wrong, in his head as well, because, like I said, a lot of times, people say the serial killer comes and everybody says, oh, I didn't know. This one, that's obvious with the jump that he did know. And he's, despite how much he's being coerced, and obviously there's some coercion involved, like he's still on the journey with her. I mean,
yes. And the goalpost keeps moving, like, oh, right. this isn't really happening. And then it's this, and then it's like, then the, and she sees this, she keeps testing yeah. it. It's like, okay, yeah, no, right. wake up. We're going to get this cat. No, we're going to yeah. go out and I found somebody. No, you don't want to get them. They're coming home for dinner. And he, he fights it. He hates it. It breaks him up, but he never leaves and he never stops it.
Right. And despite having multiple opportunities to do so. Yeah. yeah.
I will say I focused a lot on him and on her being, an abusive spouse.
Yeah.
At the same time, there was an aspect, at least to me, and I want to ask your opinions on this and obviously your intention, that there was an aspect of her besides, wanting to control him and wanting him to do stuff with her. Like she was trying to get him involved in her interests. I feel like she really did, at the same time as using him, in the way that she did, like she also did want him to be doing this with her. I felt like.
And this brings it back to that, the sexual fetish and right. where there's like a certain level of trust where you have to go and be completely humble and naked to be right. like, hey, this is something that I want. But then, which can be difficult for people, but then once that bridge has been kind of crossed, then it's trusting that, like, okay, we're going to do this together.
Speaking of naked, I did wonder. I noticed it this time. Jen never gets naked in this movie, but Farrar does. Is that intentional or just incidental?
It's just incidental. It gets things got pretty naked. I'm gonna tell you, sex scenes are very awkward things to shoot.
I'm sure.
Especially for me, I get like screening it with them. I was kind of like holding their hands.
Right, just, like, nobody wants to look at each other.
Yeah, we got this, and they were great sports about it. But I think he just got a little bit more.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, but the reason why I ask is about the intentions was because it's awful. Its first act in particular is a very erotic film. I think. Was that intentional?
Yes. Yeah. There's definitely you have to see the allure of like why would somebody go along, and it's her presence is very intoxicating, and there's definitely some stick and carrot that's happening, and for most of the movie it's stick, and it's
it plants the seeds of doubt as to whether how much Farrar was into this, because he's getting as turned on by her at the beginning, just about
so the scene, the one scene, it's where he's, I think, one of the only times we see that he's the one that's being more proactive about things. He's like, yeah, I got the saw, I'm looking at how we could do things in the tub, and it's like she rewards him.
Yeah, that's a very good way to put it. Yeah, she's very Lady Macbeth. Mm-hmm. The first act of this movie, she's like, you're gonna help me with this or no more sex,
right?
Which is the simplified version of the beginning of Macbeth. Like, reason why Macbeth kills King Duncan in Macbeth is Lady Macbeth being like, no more sex unless you become king. Which is me being, again, too intellectual, so I apologize about that, Nick.
Well, I mean, like, I don't even want to say that it's no more sex, but more than it's like she's clearly turned on to this. So if you can role play something that your partner is like super into, then who's it going to hurt? That's kind of like how you could think something like this would start.
And you'd mentioned, being in kind of a dom sub relationship and not knowing how it's supposed to actually work.
Right.
This is a good, I don't want to have to bring up like 50 Shades of Grey out of the blue here, but this is the kind of twisted version of misinformed version of that I could see them having as one of their starting points,
I say bring that in. That those books sold millions of copies and saved the box office. So yeah, this if we want to call this 50 Shades of Grey and bring in a new audience.
Sure.
Yeah.
So Sam, did you have any questions that you wanted to ask? I think I've dominated the conversation too much.
No, I did want to mention Marmalades. How much I love that.
Yeah.
Thanks for checking that out. That was
it was just so weird because like literally I was on YouTube and I don't remember what I was watching, but it was like a suggestion and I just started watching it and I watched it and I'm like, wait, that's Nick. Holy shit.
That's the guy we've got booked for the body.
It's like out of the blue. There's a lot of good little horror aspects in that show as well. If you guys should check it out on YouTube.
So tell us a bit about it. What is it? I actually didn't get a chance to check it out. So what is the premise?
Oh, I don't even know if I could give you the premise. Marmalades is a it's a project I worked on with a friend where it was just, I almost want to call it like therapy. Like we're just working through some stuff and like wanted to get to some like real low grade creative stuff. Like before you had access to this and that, where you'd like you're building stuff with paper mache and stop motion and just googly eyes and real, gluing, you know, literally fitting things together with clothespins. It's
this guy's kind of a kids show kind of slant to it, but more of like a Wonder Shows It or Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared, you know.
Yeah, where, yeah, very, very much like low rent Adult Swim,
right?
Wonder Tim Shows and Eric, yeah. Playhouse Gone to Hell.
Surprisingly, a lot of Twin Peaks in the later section of it,
which a lot of like seeming, you know, a lot of it just like weird little skits and sketches we wanted to do that seem to not tie together like non sequiturs, but then come together in this kind of like weird and twisted way, like a kid show from
hell. That's the part that, you know, that was the reason I wanted to bring it up, because it's notable, because it seems completely, every piece just seems completely unrelated until like, you know, halfway through, and then it starts to all come together and just kind of mess with your head. But at the same time, you still have, you know, like the bodybuilder clown yelling, you know, can't you, don't you read? or you know, it's been going in my head all day. The Dracula sketches are just hilarious.
it's
Dracula shows up to the door and tries to convince you he's not a Dracula, you know.
Yeah, there's a huge self-indulgent element of it where it was really something that we just wanted to make that's impossible as hell to market.
That's why YouTube's there,
you know? And promote. But I do think it's like there's a small niche audience out there that we've actually gotten a lot more through just like releasing it on Instagram as like little bits and stuff, because it's you know, it's a pretty visually interesting show. It's something where it's like it or not, I didn't want it to be boring at any frame.
Right.
So it does quite well there, but I would like more people to actually check out the full show, because
please do. Together. Please do check it out, guys. It's great. If you like the Tim and Eric, you know, weird Adult Swim stuff, you're gonna love this. I don't know. I just wanted to say it was awesome. I loved it.
Thanks for checking it out.
Yep.
So what are you working on anything now, or is it just that? Or
no, so I've got, you know, I'm always somebody that's got several irons in the fire.
Sure.
A lot of like almost false starts kind of came. I've got a script that was you know, worked on a few different projects, but you know, really polished this script that I think is just like scary and gnarly as hell, that you know, right, you know, I want to say like early March 2020 we got some like kind of exciting news on development, potential casting for it, and then just like the world went to shit, and that kind of bottomed out. So that's a project that is just like I'm dying to make, but requires a little bit more money. Sure. And then got another script that's not horror, it's actually a comedy. Mm-hmm. That's super low budget, that look at, you know, one foot kind of shopping around a little bit, and the other side saying like, maybe I should just make this thing. And then just always writing, keeping ideas going. It's been a little bit more difficult to just go out and make anything. It's sort of combination of the state of the world right now, and I'm a new father, so I'm not running out to go and make something at this moment. But
well, congratulations, you made something.
Thank you very much. But yeah, always kind of like spinning a couple plates, and you know, got several pitches ready to go for whoever wants to hear them. But yeah, kind of hit some false starts on some like very, very good projects that, you know, won't leave my mind until they're kind of made. So just looking at whatever avenue we can to kind of make those.
Awesome. So where do people find you, or do you want them to find you? But like on social media,
to find me, I'd say mostly Twitter. I'm an old man that's like, it's like I don't get a TikTok, and I don't Instagram well, and Facebook's a terrible place. So something about Twitter, it's just like we talk on Twitter, it's just like it's just a nice It can be a cesspool. It can be a but I think it's a great way to connect, and like the, you know, creators, filmmakers, writers, podcasters, critics, that it's a great ecosystem where everyone kind of can lift, you know, especially the horror community, just like really lifts each other up. I'd say that's where I am.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a very good point too. Yeah. That I always felt like, you know, with Twitter, you have to curate, I think, a little bit about who you're going to interact with. But once you find those people, it's a really rewarding experience. And I've met some wonderful people on Twitter.
Like it can be awful. It can be the worst, but it's, you know, I think I've got it. And, you know, this is a whole other conversation about, you know, social media and bubbles, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But I think I'm at least in a bubble now where I go on and I'm, for the most part, I'm just interacting and talking with, you know, good people about good stuff and, you know, horror and movies and writing and, you know, what are you doing and propping people up. So I've at least found a nice corner. If you search and do that curating, as you said, you can at least find that positive little pocket for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And right now it's easy to find who to weed out, because everybody who's like, you know, like a bad person is, you know, has something about, like, you know, we're taking back America or, you know, don't get the shot kind of crap. Like, okay, we're known not to talk to you already.
Yeah. I'll see like once in a blue moon, like something will pop up in my feed. It'll be like a retweet of some.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes it's like old account. It's like, oh, here's an old horror review site. And suddenly it's become like a
right wing
loudspeaker for anti-vaxxing or,
right,
you know, Trump 2024. And then I'll be like, okay, I've got to go and like unfollow this. But it's the most assholes will tell you they're assholes
right away. Yeah,
exactly. So speaking of assholes, here's one last question before we let you go. I wanted to ask you about critical reception to Critical Capture Code Waste. Did you find it to be largely positive, or did you get your share of one star, I hate this movie people, or was it generally well liked?
This is actually going to come back a little bit to what you were saying about like, you know, you'll find you're on a list of like, say something's like a little bit more the most shocking this or whatnot. Yeah. You know, some of that is to a degree grassroots marketing. I think there's no circle that I think is more supportive than horror fans. I think it's one of the only genres where you don't need an A-lister for somebody to like wanna, you know, it's really hard to make like say a drama that you don't have stars attached to and get people to like latch on and go out there. So, you know, I think like before it was done or working on it, like definitely probably build up some hype of like, look at this gore we've gotten, this and that. Mm-hmm. Having said that, the horror community itself is very supportive. The general critical reception, it's like, it's almost on a curve. Like you're going to find great horror movies that are, you know, mediocre to poorly reviewed by a lot of critics.
For sure.
So kind of went in with that intention. Like, you know, this, we do have an audience in mind. It's not, we're not making Shakespeare, but, you know.
But you're confident in what you're trying to say.
And I think that goes a long way. But you also don't know until it goes out to the world. So, you know, when you're in a no budget movie like this, you're really going the festival route. You're being selective for the festivals you're doing. So, you know, I'm not going for Sundance, really going where there are genre festivals that are very supportive for this. And you think you've got a good movie, but you don't know until people are seeing it. And out the gate, you know, the critical reception within those circles was really, overwhelmingly positive. And, you know, we won a good number of awards at some great festivals that really validated. It's like, I think we might have something kind of special here. As long as we're not even just always horror reviewers, but there's some where it's like not where they're nicer, but I would say like generally the critical reception has been quite good. we've been ripped apart. It's read somewhere. It's like, there's the one stars. This is the worst movie that people have ever seen. You know, this is trash. I turned it off.
Yeah. As supportive as the horror community is generally, there's always going to be some of those people who just hate everything or tear others down.
Those come in and I read it all. I'll read every review that comes in. I think people that say they don't are probably lying or just have better things to do. some of them they don't feel great, but it's kind of a numbers game. It's like if review after review after review are saying this is awful, it might make you feel like you're in a different place. But it's batting wise, I'd say that overwhelming number of the review side is would be positive. And then people in a world where it's between IMDb and Letterboxd, people, they get to vote. And I think they kind of vote with ones and tens. We get them both. Which that tells me we're speaking to something. A lot of it's not saying this was boring or the acting was terrible and stuff. I think we've ticked those boxes. So overall, I would say I'm quite happy with how we've done critically with it.
Very nice. I think it's a criminally underrated film. I think it's still underseen. I don't think enough horror fans have actually checked it out. I've seen a lot of people talk about like I said in some of those memes and stuff with the people were like, it's in the I haven't seen it box, and I'm like, I'm like, check this out, and I think even non-horror film fans I feel like would find something in Capture Kill Release. In the sense that there's a lot more going on here. It's a very emotional, it's a very psychological story. To the point that I mean, if you are listening to this and you've seen it in the extreme category and you're kind of afraid of that, check it out.
Don't be afraid of it, because even if you do find it extreme, it's an example of how to do extreme well. Or even if you don't like found footage films, it's still an example of how to do it well. I think there's a lot here for everybody.
I agree.
Check it out.
Yeah.
We give two thumbs up. Are we doing thumbs now?
I don't know what we're doing.
Well, let's not.
But yeah, but generally speaking,
we might get sued.
Check out Capture Kill Release. It is actually available currently on Tubi, which if you are a horror film fan listening to this podcast, you're not watching Tubi, do. There's so much wonderful, crazy shit on Tubi. But Capture Kill Release is among it. And it's really kind of a blast. I'm a very big fan of this film, and I remember seeing it in 2016 and being like, and pretty blown away by it. I was just like, and I hadn't heard any hype for it, at the time. So I found it kind of like, oh, it's a diamond in the rough, and I think it still is. I think that, and I think that it should still find. I think it still has an audience to find, and I hope we do a little bit to help it find that audience. So Nick, thank you very much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
It was a delight to have you. It's a wonderful interview, and we're so glad you came. And hopefully we can do this again sometime, maybe about somebody else's film. You can come and talk about Martyrs or something. Although I don't think we're going to do Martyrs. I don't think either one of us want to see it again. But even though I love Martyrs, but Sam, do you have any last words before I sign us off?
No, but once again, also check out Marmalade. I think a lot of people haven't seen it who need to see it.
And that is on big fan. On YouTube.
Yeah, Marmalade is on YouTube.
Yep. Awesome. Okay, well, thank you very much, Nick McNulty, director of Capture Kill Release. It's a great film. Sam, as usual, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And as always, we remind you to keep it positive, keep it constructive. Love yourself. Love your fellow horror fans. As we kind of pointed out, find your bubble on Twitter. You will be glad you did. Or on Facebook. If you can find a good bubble on Facebook, do so. But anyway, I digress frequently. But keep it positive. Keep it constructive. Love yourself. Love your fellow horror fans. And thank you very much. Good night. And namaste. Dancing at the devil's ball.